This episode of the Coin Spice Podcast is brought to you by Cash Shuffle, because what you do with your money is your business. To give this new product a try for fungibility and privacy, head on over to electroncash.org, download their latest wallet 4.0.0, and give it a spin. CashShuffle.com for more information, because what you do with your money is your business.
What is really going on, crypto savages? You are listening to the Coin Spice Podcast with host C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief at coinspice.io, your home for spicy crypto things on the net.
It is World Book Day, so to steal from another popular podcaster, if you could recommend one book, it doesn't have to necessarily be crypto-related, but one book to the listeners out there, what would you recommend?
Oh, man. Well, I think anybody who's heard me talk on more than one occasion knows what the answer to this is going to be. So, you know, allow me to fulfill my character of my own self and answer. Of course, it would be The Singularity of Near by Ray Kurzweil. And, you know, just some sort of picture into why, you know, Kurzweil, if you go Google, you can find a video of him when he's in his early teens, maybe 15 years old, and he's on a early black and white TV kind of show where it's bringing out people and showing what skills they have. And they're bringing out this kind of little kid, and they're going to wow the crowd that he has these this homebrew computer, which is the size of, you know, a couple of like refrigerators and a washing machine, you know, big hardware. And it can generate its own music algorithmically. So, you know, there's this like 15-year-old kid, and he's showing how to create, you know, software on homebrew hardware that can create music algorithmically. And this is in the 50s. And so he was the dude who created the first text-to-speech synthesizer with Stevie Wonder, actually, in the 70s and 80s. He created the Kurzweil synthesizer, which is as good as the Moog. He's one of only six scientists on the Army Science Advisory Board. I mean, civilians. He's one of only six civilians on the Army Science Advisory Board. He's got 17 honorary doctorates. He's one of the lead engineers at Google. And he's like the high priest of this idea of the singularity. And so, you know, in the 80s, he had a book called The Age of Intelligent Machines. In the 90s, he followed it up with The Age of Spiritual Machines. And then around the millennium, he came out with The Singularity is Near. And, you know, it's dated a little bit. You know, it is 20 years old, and some of the places he wasn't spot on, but, man, he got so much of it right. And there's so much material around it, videos and TED Talks, and just the high level being that if you measure the pace of change as one century being from 1900 to 2000, so you might imagine somebody who was born in 1900, they saw, you know, the end of the Industrial Revolution. They saw electricity and cars. They saw the First World War, and they saw the Second World War. They saw, of course, radio and TV and mobile phones and VCRs and the internet and on and on and on all the way through 2000. So, you know, that's 100 years. That's the pace of change that we're going to measure things by. So if you have that measurement, then we're going to experience 20,000 years worth of paradigm shifts in our 100 years. From, you know, 2000 to 2100, we're going to experience 20,000 years worth of paradigm shifts. So, you know, that's really what drives me. It really, if you want to know one of the big things that drives me, it's simply that we live in the ultimate Goldilocks zone of all of history. We live in the Goldilocks zone, and, you know, Goldilocks zone, for those who don't know, means it's not too hot, it's not too cold, it's just right. We live in the Goldilocks zone of all history. I mean, of the entire universe, of our planet, of the history of our planet. We live in the Goldilocks zone of our solar system, of history, you know, like. And then to top it all off, in our generation, we're going to witness 20,000 years worth of paradigm shifts. So that just really means whatever you put your focus into, you have the potential to have outrageous impact on the world. So go check out The Singularity is Near by Ray Kurzweil.
Wow, what an answer. And just for those who are listening, Gabriel had no idea I was going to ask him this question. I just said I was going to throw him a curveball, and you never know with me. So, wow. I was... I mean, I knew that you were an obvious fan, but I was not expecting that. So awesome, awesome, awesome. And that pace of change that you're talking about, as I hinted at right before I asked about World Book Day here, that pace of change, I mean, the last time we spoke, just to give listeners, a framing to set it up here, is we were just weeks away from what was then we were hoping would just be a upgrade with that. That was sort of the kind of the party line going forward. No. I don't think there's going to be a split. You know, we got a lot of, very, how do we put it? Forceful personalities and, but no one wants a split. So this is an upgrade. Don't let the perceived enemy at the time was, dominate the the narrative. We're just going to have an upgrade and all will be well. That was weeks before November 15th. And I think we all were hoping that would not happen. And then, and that was really the focus of our conversation. And we talked a little bit about the beginnings of the intuition of what you would later call the Tocambrian explosion. You hadn't really gotten there yet, but you were working with Wormhole, and there was lots of stuff sort of ruminating, and I came right at you and I was joking with you, why are you trying to destroy Bitcoin Cash? And we laughed that was 5 months ago, and so now we're here. World Book Day, April 24th, 2019. Holy shit, how are you, man? How are you doing?
Wow, man. Wow. Yeah, I mean, on a personal level, I'm the best I've ever been in my whole life. So things are going really, really good. So thank you very much. On a professional level too, man, I think that the fork, because it ended up being very contentious, was really hard. I was going through some personal stuff at the time that I don't need to dig up right now, but I was going through some serious personal issues, and then the fork and the market crashing kind of all three hit me simultaneously, to where in December I was feeling pretty bummed out, man.
Just interrupt your flow for a second.
No worries.
Because I talk to a lot of people, as you do, but I talk to a lot of people in the space. I have heard that basic gist from a lot of people, actually. So that's really interesting how that happened. But I'm gonna keep going.
Yeah. I think, and that riffs into exactly what I was going to say. I get a similar sense that a lot of people witness something like that, and then now everybody is rebounding pretty strongly, and I think the tide is clearly rising again. So, I'm headed back to Tokyo tomorrow, and I've been back in the States now for about 6 weeks. So, 6.5 weeks ago, I was in Hong Kong at the Blockchain Week, and I remember saying when I left, the tide has turned. It's clear from the event that I was just at, first off spending 6 weeks in Tokyo, of course, and then going to Hong Kong for a week, and just seeing all of the people and all of the engineers and all of the money and all of the energy, and just like, what's the next big play? What's the next big play? What's the next big play? And I just realized that the tide had turned, and that it was clear that there was just so much energy happening, so much good engineering happening, so many people investing so much time and money and energy, that it was obvious that the tide had turned, and that despite the price, all boats were going to begin to rise. And then sure enough, just, 3 weeks later, the price rebounded and we got a 200% pump. But to me, it just feels like we are just at the very, very beginning of something very special. So, everything is seasonal. Everything in life is seasonal. The pendulum always swings back and forth, and the wheel of fortune spins. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. And anybody who's been in this space long enough knows that it was obvious that the market was going to rebound. That was obvious. So, as long as you had the resources to get through that kind of market, well, whatever that meant, as long as you were able to get through it, basically, you knew it was going to eventually rebound, right? So it's kind of like, okay, just do your thing while the market's down. And, it seems now that it has begun to rebound. And it seems now that the past couple iterations of the technology to me have been about it not being quite mature enough. So, you know, obviously phase one was literally back when Satoshi was around, or maybe right after he left, the Silk Road kind of days when the very first fortunes were made, if you will. And the technology was clearly not ripe then. You know, that was probably like before Ethereum even existed. Then we can get into this a little bit. The Tocambrian explosion happened where Ethereum was born, and that happened because the Bitcoin core guys decided, in the same way they didn't want to scale the blocks, they didn't want tokens. So I've said this before, that everybody knows the Bitcoin core guys fumbled by not creating bigger blocks and scaling out Bitcoin. It's obvious with hindsight that Bitcoin core, BTC, is not where it should be today, nor has it had the impact on the world that it could have. Because they simply did not take the pragmatic move and scale out the blocks, even to 2 megabytes. Even the smallest little budge of giving any, being pragmatic at all, well, they weren't willing to do it, and they shattered it into a million different alts. And the token ecosystem was part of that. So tokens should have happened. Maybe not full-on Ethereum-level tokens. So Ethereum and EOS, they bring a lot to the table. And in a way, we're fortunate that they were born, because they allowed Vitalik to approach the problem with a completely clean slate and say, okay, well, if we're not building on script, which is the stack-based language of Bitcoin, then let's go all the way. Let's have a 20-complete language and have it be super high level. Or let's have a VM, basically, and have a high-level language like JavaScript, that was called Solidity, and there was others, that compiles down to this VM. And so they went there, and in a sense, we're fortunate that they did that, because now we have these token platforms, which are outrageously powerful. But for the vast majority of the ERC-20 tokens, the big, you know, there's been $28 billion in token sales, which have happened on Ethereum since 2017.
Right.
And the vast majority of that could have happened on Bitcoin had they simply had simple tokens. So the fact that we are now having those kind of tokens on Bitcoin Cash, to me, is the 100x multiplier. And it's the solution that the market has been asking us for. Every week when I on-ramp a new company into Bitcoin Cash, they universally say to me, we know you guys do cash best, and we want to accept payments over Bitcoin Cash, done. But what we also want to be able to raise money on the blockchain. We want to issue a stock on the blockchain, or a utility token, or we want to have an in-app purchase or some type of mileage point for our customers. How do you do that on blockchain, on Bitcoin Cash? How do you do tokens? And so it's a solution the market has been asking us for, and it's the 100x multiplier.
And when you said it back, when we last spoke about 5 months ago, I was somewhat skeptical, but hopeful, in the sense that, because I trust your intuitions and what you're hearing, but also I think for people in cryptocurrency, so take off the idea for a second that, you know, for whatever reason, they don't like tokens, or, you know, whatever the ideology is behind it. I think it's fair to say that, as you've just articulated, the market wants it. And and furthermore, you're almost retarding your project if you're not at least venturing into that idea. So if anything, I think maybe Bitcoin Cash it's getting there, but if anything, it should have been there a while back, if we use your logic of Bitcoin Core. So it is interesting to watch it unfurl and go on and kind of take root. And we're very early days, right? We're early days on even the token idea, because in a lot of ways the ICO madness has kind of subsided. But there's sort of a new day, right? This is really, really early in the Bitcoin Cash development.
Sure. So there's a couple of things you said there, which I think were absolutely spot on, and it's where I would have taken the conversation anyway. So let me just reinforce them. So the first one is, you had mentioned, you said something about people not liking tokens. And so, of course,
yeah, for whatever reason, they bring it up, and it's this polarizing subject for whatever reason.
Sure. Well, yeah. So, yeah. So, and you even said yourself, even you were skeptical when I mentioned it 5 months ago, and, you know, and you mentioned Wormhole. And so if we walk out the whole storyline, before we were even, SLP was around at the time. Unfortunately, we created an SLP SDK as well as a wormhole SDK. We placed our bets on both of them because I was confident one of them was going to pop. And wormhole ended up not popping in the way that I expected it to. And so in wormhole, you had to actually burn a Bitcoin cash in order to create the wormhole coin, which is the utility token of that platform. So right. You can imagine where I was at 5 months ago when I was trying to push this through the community. And part of the offering was, and you have to burn Bitcoin cash. That was part of the big divisive super war during the last
I forgot all fork. About that. That's right. You're right.
And so I have a theory on why that was the case before I even go into why I think people are bitter about tokens. So without going into any names, there were some groups who were particularly vocal prior to the last fork, and they were attacking Wormhole. And the reason I think that they were doing that is because, in my opinion, Wormhole had the potential to be a very, very, very powerful platform. And it still does. For what it's not, for what it's worth, Wormhole is not dead. It's just frozen. The protocol is basically only being maintained. They haven't finished out the smart contracts, which was, you know, the big bang we were waiting on, basically. So while it's just in maintenance mode and not being proactively developed, we focused on SLP instead. But to me, Wormhole had the potential to be so powerful that I felt like people and companies were attacking Wormhole on social media simply because they couldn't compete with it, because I felt like it was really, really good. So independent of that, why do people in the Bitcoin tribe not like tokens? I've thought about this a lot, and I think the heart of it is simply that people in Bitcoin tribe, and that goes back to Bitcoin Core, which then forked into all of our different sub-tribes we have now. We didn't get the Tokenbrain explosion because the core developers shooed Vitalik away. They said, no thanks, we're not buying what you're selling, man. Go on, do your own thing. And because right. He did that, yeah, he went and created his own thing. So if anybody holds any Ethereum, which I don't think I do at the moment, but I have held plenty in the past, I think Ethereum is absolutely amazing. In the past, every once in a while, I would plug in my one of my hardware wallets, and I would go to my Ether wallet, my Ether hardware wallet, that page, Mu, and I would just have some free money in the form of tokens that ERC-20 tokens that people had airdropped. And so, you know, if you scale yourself out to a whale or even a little shrimp or a fish or a shark, any level of the sea creature scale that you are in Bitcoin land, you missed out on that much free money. So, you know, the people who are real players, the people who really care about the health of the ecosystem, who also hold massive amounts of the token or coin, in our case, Bitcoin Cash, have wanted tokens in the Bitcoin ecosystem because they've seen how they've acted as a channel for capital and smart money and smart people to enter into the Ethereum ecosystem. So, like, the people who really care have wanted tokens to come to Bitcoin because they missed out on all of those airdrops that they would have gotten had they had all of those ERC-20 tokens happened on Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin at the time. So we think that there is a whole new wave. I mean, man, tokens haven't even started. Some people are like, oh, tokens are over. No, 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 I beg to differ, man. In the same way that people say, oh, it's all over, it's like saying that Bitcoin Core will never lose or will never lose its seat as the number one coin. Of course it can, and it would, and it will if it continues on its current path. I mean, you know, nothing is set in stone, man. That's just not the way that the universe works. It's all way too dynamic. And the market will find the solution that it wants. It will route around bad actors, and it will route around places where there's inefficiencies. It's just the way that this works. So thinking that, you know, Bitcoin would not ultimately be supplanted in one day is crazy, and thinking that tokens ultimately won't come to Bitcoin is also crazy. So to me, I think it's kind of an honor. I feel like an honor to help introduce tokens into Bitcoin Cash. And one of the great things about SLP, so we can kind of bring it back to the technology, which at the moment is winning, Simple Ledger Protocol, created by some absolute whiz kids. So just to give a shout out to James Cramer and to John Old Pukeball, and to, yes, some people who went to the BSV camp, that they still deserve a shout out, Ryan from yours, and Unwriter, the amazing Unwriter. You know, these people created a really great token protocol. And other than it not being miner validated, this feels very much like a native. This feels like what tokens would feel like on Bitcoin to me, in my opinion. It leverages UTXO. It can do everything you can do with pay to script hash. So, all right, whatever you can do in terms of smart contracts today on Bitcoin Cash, you can do with tokens. And it's only seen by the miners as a cash transactions. So, you know, today, pardon me, today we have 150,000 transactions every 10 minutes. We have PayPal scale. All of those, in theory, could be token transactions, and it wouldn't slow down the network at all. In Ethereum, because of the way every single node has to execute every single smart contract, if you have a smart contract that blows up, like CryptoKitties, it clogs up the network and the transaction fees spike, that, and that's the world they're hitting right now.
Right, yeah. That was going to be my
next question.
Right.
Yeah, so there's pros and cons. So, you know, I'm doing a ton of biz dev right now, man, more than I've ever done in my career, simply because Bitcoin.com is just in full on fire mode right now. Just such mad props to anybody, Roger, all the way down the chain, who happens to hear this right now. Roger, Mate, Emil, anybody who hears this, Stefan, Jared, the team is absolutely destroying it. We're doing so many great biz dev deals. So I'm meeting up with a ton of different teams that are doing tokens on other platforms. And so we're hammering out the pros and the cons about what it means to launch on Bitcoin Cash and to launch on Ethereum. Those are kind of the two ones that I spend most of my time talking about these days. And really, man, it just comes down, the thing that I hope anybody hears this, who takes one line away from this, who remembers what I'm saying, remember this. What we want with anything like tokens on Bitcoin Cash, we want it to complement and not compete with the cash offering. So we want to always be fully aware at every moment that the thing we bring to the table, the problem we are solving with Bitcoin Cash, is cash for the planet. So that's it, right? So if you have to boil it down to what are the essence of our values, what are the things we value as a tribe, and what problem are we solving? The problem we're really solving is cash for the planet. So we want to make sure that our tokens complement our cash layer and do not compete with it. And so that's what I really love about SLP. To me, they feel idiomatic to Bitcoin Cash. They feel native to Bitcoin Cash. And I think if you remember, there was a proposal by the brilliant Andrew Stone of Bitcoin Unlimited called Op Group to create tokens, which was really good. And this came out maybe two hard forks ago. And it didn't get through at the time. They could not reach any consensus on it between the ABC team and Bitcoin Unlimited. And Emil from our team was there. And I had just joined Bitcoin.com at the time. I was maybe there like 2.5-3 months. And tokens were still very new to our tribe. Again, because we shooed Vitalik away, but when I say we, I mean the Bitcoin Core developers, we didn't experience the Tokenbrain explosion, so we don't have a great intuition about tokens. So we're developing that in our tribe right now. So at the time when Op Group was proposed by Andrew Stone, it kind of fell on deaf ears, I feel like, when it came to the Bitcoin Cash core developers. And I don't mean that like core developers, but the people who build the protocol between Bitcoin Unlimited and Bitcoin ABC, those guys, they didn't vibe on it. They didn't pick it up. But I think now, because I have seen, and I don't want to speak for, obviously I would never speak for Omri, so please don't misinterpret that if anybody hears this, but just from conversations I've had now online and seeing threads of different core developers such as Omri and others, it seems like we as a tribe are developing a good intuition around tokens. So if Bitcoin Cash were ever to get native miner validated tokens, something like Op Group, although it probably wouldn't be Op Group because they shot that down already, so I'm guessing it would have to be, you know, something else, even if it was based on Op Group. I think SLP is the perfect first step, way better than Wormhole, because as I mentioned, other than being not being miner validated, SLP feels native. It's based on UTXO and it leverages Bitcoin Cash script. It is just like doing a Bitcoin Cash transaction, exactly like it, except ... it's not miner validated. So if somebody like Omri or one of the core developers were to ever see SLP as a prototype and to see the great adoption that it's getting, the Tokenbrain explosion that's happening, and realizing that it could be a really strong asset to Bitcoin Cash, I think SLP is the perfect prototype for that.
And building on tokens on Bitcoin Cash, I've already seen some people try to compare how much it costs comparatively to
right.
The ETH and so on and so forth. And it's even cheaper in that regard, right?
Sure. So I think if we had to have a pros and a cons list, we would say this. So one of the things that Ethereum did is they just said, okay, we're going to go Turing complete. And that basically, without going down the computer science rabbit hole, that means they can do like loops and recursion. And you can't do that in Bitcoin script. so, in a very big way, that is an entire sort of level of complexity that Bitcoin Cash Script cannot do that Ethereum can. So if you were going to do something like a full-on distributed autonomous organization or something like that, you would probably be better served by something like Ethereum, because they have a suite of APIs which serve that use case. But if you're looking for something which is like cash, and for a lot of these ERC-20 tokens that are just utility tokens, where instead of paying in Ethereum, you pay in this other little token, those would just sing in sweet harmony on Bitcoin Cash tokens, because they're just Bitcoin Cash transactions, and we do that better than anyone. You know, today a Bitcoin Cash transaction is a 30th of a penny. So, you know, when you go do a Ethereum transaction, and I don't know what they are today, I don't want to misquote them, but I'm sure it costs cents, maybe even dimes. I don't remember. It's been a while since I've done one. It could be 30 cents, maybe not that much, but I don't know. It's definitely at least 5 to 10 cents. You know, we're a 30th of a penny. So again, it's just like we have this scale, which is really our beauty. You know, we're going for 10 billion humans on Earth being able to do 50 on-chain transactions every single day. And we feel like that's worldwide commerce, the Internet of Things, tokens, smart contracts, privacy. So, you know, there's so much happening in Bitcoin Cash. We have Cash Shuffle, which is a layer of privacy. And similar to our tokens, again, this just speaks to what is so, so strong about the way Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash is architected. Privacy is like a layer two feature in Bitcoin land. And when I say layer two became a bad word during the last fork, because people started saying layer two became synonymous with Lightning Network.
Right.
But, you know, I think we're all mature enough where we can abstract that away and approach it with fresh eyes and say layer two just means something that's built on layer one. Okay. So privacy is like a layer two thing in our world. Just tokens are a layer two thing. Privacy just looks like a cash transaction. If you do a cash shuffle transaction, it's just a cash transaction. And part of the problem with privacy first tokens is that they scare governments. And governments are going to be really scared if those get adopted at scale, simply because they represent such a threat. And also I've read, and I don't know a ton about privacy coins, to be fair, but I've read there's even sometimes you can't even prove if people have changed the issuance. Somewhere I read that, and I don't know if that's true, but I've read that. So with Bitcoin Cash, we got privacy, but it just looks like cash transactions, just like we have tokens, and it just looks like cash transactions. So yeah, everything, I just want to say it again to reinforce it for anybody who might hear this. Anything that we build in Bitcoin Cash land complements our cash offering and does not compete with it.
And that really is how this is proceeding, as far as I can see, and what I'm watching happen. I'm seeing, you know, it's slow, but it's persistent, in the sense that there are tokens out there. They're ones that are, now there's a real sense of play. So I've seen, like, for the Coin Spice guys, there's like a spicy token or spice token, and there's all these different kind of playful ideas, where people get a chance to interact with it, use it as you know, somewhat ironic at first. And then I've already watched in Telegram chats and various iterations of tipper bots, seeing people begin to use them and other people collecting them and sending them back and forth. And the SLP torch is flying around Twitter. You're also part of creating a wallet that I found kind of interesting. Along these lines, with the Badger wallet, what's the status there, and how's that working?
You had mentioned there's already sort of a playfulness happening. So yes, right now we have 1,000. I think right now we're at about 1,100 tokens at this moment. I've been throwing around this term called the Tokenbrian explosion, and the idea is, for the first 4 billion years on Earth, life was very simple. And then during this era called the Cambrian, there was an explosion of different life forms, and that leads to all of the biodiversity we see around us today. And so I believe we're witnessing something similar in the token ecosystem of Bitcoin Cash, and I'm calling it the Tokenbrian explosion. And that's basically, we're just going to see an absolute explosion of different types of tokens, protocols, and different use cases. And some of them are going to not make any sense and die off, and some of them are going to thrive in their ecosystem, and as they grow, they will ultimately compete against each other in a Darwinian way. and with the ultimate outcome being some incredibly powerful and useful tokens in the Bitcoin Cash ecosystem. And so I'm calling that the Tocambrian explosion. And what I believe is there were all the precursors were in place for the Tocambrian explosion. So after we had our fork and we re-enabled some of the old opcodes and we made our op return larger, 223 bytes, all of a sudden we had everything in place to create tokens. And so there was like a bunch of different token protocols which exploded, and SLP and Wormhole were the two that I focused on with my team, because those are the two that I thought were going to pop. And sure enough, SLP has actually popped really big. And so now the next two big things that are in place we really need are exchanges, and we're starting to get that. So there's been a couple that I can mention here in a second, several that are coming to my mind. Yeah, exactly. So the LLM. So yeah, we want to mention that one in a second. Merit is one. And then there's also ACB, which is a large company here in Tokyo, which launched another one token. And then there's also some stable coins, which are coming out. So there's so much here that comes to my mind as I sort of fumbling, write these down so I can try and circle back to them. But real quick, the reason we want exchanges is because the moment any of these tokens have some type of financial value, that's going to accelerate it, because people take their money very, very seriously. And so today, where we're in this playful zone, where we have 1,000 tokens out there and not many of them have much value, as soon as any of them have any value, that's going to matter. And so a good example is the LLM. So Libraland is a country that, go to Libraland.org. They recently launched their currency, the Merit, on Bitcoin Cash. LLM is the ticker. And they launched 1 million Merit, and they now are, you can buy them on an exchange. And depending on how much Merit you own, I believe it gives you voting rights that you can check online, and it'll give you a better description about what the token is used for.
Yep.
That's very, very exciting. I mean, you know, keep in mind how crazy that is. So it's sort of like you can have a trillion playful tokens. That doesn't matter. And hopefully we will. Hopefully we'll tokenize everything. All the goods, hardware, physical, software, real world, digital, virtual, everything. And then there will be some that are over have an oversized effect on the world. So the fact that Libraland has issued their token, the Merit, on Bitcoin Cash is a big one. That alone should be enough to stop and say, okay, so we need exchanges. So an exchange is now offering Libraland Merit. They issued 1 million of them. They're now on sale. They're there for $1 a piece. So it's like, okay, people are creating value on Bitcoin Cash. You can now launch a token. And next we need pay to script hash. So we need to explore the smart contract space. So, you know, again, Ethereum does really, really, really powerful smart contracts. So when people come to Bitcoin Cash, of course, they're instantly going to say, well, what can I do in Bitcoin Cash? And script is just different than Solidity. And we need the developer ecosystem to sort of form around our smart contracts. And we're working on that. We have a guy named Roscoe, who just joined our team 2 weeks ago, who's working on something called CashScript, which is a high-level TypeScript API, which will compile down to script and works with your Bitbox web developer workflow. So, you know, we need to basically build out the smart contract APIs for people, and then that's when we're going to have this Tocambrian explosion. And so in the context of what you're saying, we've been working on something called Badger. And, you know, we are taking a lot of the cues of what we're doing from the Ethereum ecosystem, because we think that Ethereum has done a lot of things really well. They've done a lot of things right. And so we think it's good to basically look to them for guidance, because we're trying to develop an intuition around tokenomics and the token ecosystem and what it means in Bitcoin. Because again, we want to complement our token, we want to complement our cash layer. And so we want to understand what's the very best of what we can take from Ethereum and port it into our ecosystem. And one of the things they've done really well is they have this API called Web3. And it's basically, to a super high level, it's kind of the layer that sits between your smart contracts and Ethereum. And so we're creating, and then there's something called MetaMask, which is like a browser extension, a wallet, which allows you to kind of cruise the web and have your Ethereum with you and run smart contracts and have like a more advanced web using this Web3 API. Well, we're borrowing very heavily from that, and we have what's calling Web4 BCH API, and we forked MetaMask into something called Badger. So we forked MetaMask and took out all of the Ethereum code and plugged in Bitbox So Bitbox plus MetaMask equals Badger. And Badger today works on Chrome and Firefox. We have a prototype today working on iOS and Android. It'll probably be live within 2 weeks or so. It's super high priority for us, but we have a couple other things we've got to get live first. You know how that all goes, but it's definitely close. Let's say 2 weeks out, we'll have a mobile version of Badger. And Badger is just very, very exciting because the analogy I give is this. We believe that Bitcoin Cash has the potential to be as powerful and as meaningful as the web and beyond. And in the same way that if you were running a web browser from 2 years ago, you wouldn't get the most that the modern web has to offer you. If you're not running a very, very state-of-the-art modern wallet, you won't get the very, very best that Bitcoin Cash has to offer you. And Bitcoin Cash has a really rich suite of APIs. And there's just a whole renaissance going on right now in the developer ecosystem. So we created Badger to be a state-of-the-art wallet, which is super intuitive. You could work on it no matter your gender, your nationality, your age, your language. It doesn't matter. It would be super intuitive. It would be extendable by developers so that they could take it places that we hadn't even thought of. So it's got all kinds of different APIs that developers can hook in. And then it's like an identity vault and a gateway into the world of Bitcoin Cash apps. So we believe that the web plus Bitcoin Cash is a very, very powerful offering. And we believe Badger is your gateway into that world. So our goal with Badger is just to be the state-of-the-art identity vault and gateway into Bitcoin Cash apps.
Yeah, it is unbelievable when you that's why I like having you on, because I see this in bits and pieces, and I see it trickling out over here and over there, and it's interesting and exciting, but it's hard to kind of put it all together. So when you weave it into a tapestry like that, it really does make it clearer. So for people who are interested, I'm dead serious about it. Even though, you know, we're tight and everything, I think that just the way you put it out there, there's no come on. I don't feel like it's necessarily shilly. It's just kind of, you know, a version of someone who's passionate about certain projects, and they're setting it out. So it's exactly what I was hoping to get from our talk this time around. But also, if people want
to... Yeah, well, let's plug it real quick. If anybody, if anybody wants to check it out, please go badger.bitcoin.com, badger.bitcoin.com.
And for them to get started with SLP tokens and to start interacting
there. Yeah, so the big project, so I'm the Director of Developer Services and Global Head of R&D at Bitcoin.com. It's truly a great honor. Thank you so much to Roger if you hear this. So the big project I lead is our developer services. So go to developer.bitcoin.com, and that's a place to start with our Bitbox SDK for doing Bitcoin Cash applications. We have SLP SDK in JavaScript, and one in Kotlin for Android, and one in Swift for iOS for doing tokens. We also have rest.bitcoin.com, which is the JSON RPC over HTTP. We also have bitdb.bitcoin.com and slpdb.bitcoin.com. And we're currently building out cloud.bitcoin.com because we're going to have a pro tier offering for people who are building Bitcoin Cash applications at a professional grade.
It is amazing what's going on there. And I can't thank you enough for all the hard work, for hanging in there. I know it has not been an easy half a year, and I know it's been quite the roller coaster ride for you. I remember when you first came on the scene here, and we were talking, and you know, you've been put through it, man. And I think we all have in one way or another, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens going forward. So maybe I got a rain check here for maybe 6 months from now. We catch up again. Yeah,
absolutely. Anytime, man. Let me know. It's an honor. You know, I enjoy it.
That is Gabriel Cardona, everybody. Check out his work. We'll have links to everything he's talked about in the show notes. He's got his bags packed, actually literally, but he's ready to go. He's working hard. And if you're an investor, an enthusiast, someone interested in the possibilities of Bitcoin Cash, he's the guy to talk to. So thanks again, man, for coming on. And I am definitely rooting for you.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.